All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Boxed Wine and Witchcraft. This is Melissa, and today I have Zach with us again. He is slowly monopolizing all of our podcast with all of his fun topics and information. But what have you brought for us this time, Zach?
So in rounding out Pride Month, I figured let's talk a little bit about queer saints, which isn't something the Catholic Church likes to acknowledge. So this is for those who are interested in Christian folk magic or practice a type of folk Catholicism. So as I said, most people know that June is Pride Month. The Stonewall Riots occurring in this month, and most festivals happening in June. Some little towns, for whatever reason, do like to extend it into August, but so some people may be familiar with this, because it has gained a little bit of notoriety before, by, I want to say, the Catholic press. It may have even been an official statement by the Vatican, but do not quote me on that. There is a general patron saint of gays, queers, trans individuals, and that is Saint Sebastian. Now, for the context of this podcast, I'm going to be talking about Sebastian as patron saint of the G in LGBT. So Saint Sebastian was born in 256 Anno Domini. He was born in what then was called Gallia Narbonensis, what now is a region in South France. That name no longer exists, but it was a region in South France. And Saint Sebastian's story is he was a martyr. He worked under the Roman Emperor, I believe it was Diocletian at that time. And because of his faith, he was killed. He performed miracles of healing. He performed very well in his position as, I believe he was commander of the guard. But because of his unwillingness to give up his faith, he was martyred. Now, most people, when they see Saint Sebastian, will see him pierced with arrows and tied to a tree. That's actually not how he died. He survived that and later was, I've read two accounts, so, and you'll find that a lot, especially like the more older saints or the more obscure saints, there definitely are conflicting accounts of their lives. But Saint Sebastian was drowned. Others say that he was clubbed, but I'll let you decide what you want to decide. But Saint Sebastian is seen as the patron saint of gay men specifically because of the attributes he has while he's tied to the tree and pierced with arrows. He is youthful, and that is something that, if you look into queer art or gay art, is very prized. He's a very beautiful individual. Another thing that is heavily prized, and not just physical beauty. If you have ever spent time around gay people in general, this may seem like a stereotype, and it probably is, but we try to find the beauty in everything. And I think that is something that we have to do because we as oppressed individuals have to find the happier things in life. And so beauty is one of those things we look for. Da Vinci was often considered bisexual. And most of his paintings focus on the beauty of the natural world and the beauty of people. You know, you look at the Mona Lisa, and she isn't the most beautiful person, but he put a lot of focus into her mouth. He put a lot of focus into her eyes. So we have this idea of beauty or beautifying certain things or turning what can be beautiful about something into an even more beautiful example of itself. So Saint Sebastian is often seen as the patron saint of, in general, all gay people, all queer people, all trans people, but more specifically, the patron saint of gay men. Moving on, we have the patron saint of lesbians, the L in LGBTQ. I chose for this one Hildegard von Bingen, and I've chosen some more accessible saints because you can get into the more obscure ones, but it is even harder then to find information about them. So we have Hildegard von Bingen. She was born in 1098, somewhere in Germany. Again, accounts of her life, we can't specifically pinpoint where she was born. There are, again, some ideas, but she was born in 1098 in Germany. She was an abbess. She was a nun. She was a composer, a writer. She was very learned in healing, the healing arts. But we're seeing her here as the patron saint of lesbians because she was a woman who was in charge and very much did not want to be married. She did not want to fall into being owned by a man. This woman of power, where even men would have to submit to her, is something very, very highly uncommon in that era. And with that, she gains her notoriety as being a patron saint of lesbians. She is very strong. She is very in charge. She, again, does not submit to men. Men submit to her. She's twisting the social binary there of who should be in charge and who should have say. She ran an entire abbey. So she, an abbey of women, obviously, it was a nunnery. So there's this heavy connection there with the feminine and with women. She was born of lower nobility, and from an early childhood, she wanted to become a nun. She was an educated individual. A lot of her education, she actually came about herself since she had access to books. She had the ability to write and read. Now, the patron saint of bisexuals, we're getting to the B in LGBT. This one was hard for me to say because there isn't really one and in any facet that could be bisexual. So I decided we'll go with Mary Magdalene for this one. Patron saint of bisexuals. So Mary Magdalene is often seen as this, as her studiers, I guess, would call her a whore. They loved that term back in the day. But Mary Magdalene was this woman, again, where she was born and when she was born is also incredibly hard to find any information on. I don't even think there were any speculations that I came across. Most people just say she was born around the time Christ was born because she would have been about the same age when he died. But Mary Magdalene, for those of you who don't know the story, and even this story is sometimes conflicted on whether this was Mary Magdalene or a different woman, was the one who was about to be stoned by elders of the church. Church here in the Jewish reference, not in the Christian reference. She was about to be stoned for being a prostitute, a profession which back then wasn't so weird, but for whatever reason, certain sects of Judaism were very much against. As she was about to be stoned, Jesus stepped in the way and said, "He who without sin cast the first stone." This saved Mary's life. She then also began to follow him during his ministry and his teachings. Now, those of you who know the story about the woman with the alabaster jar, some say that was Mary Magdalene. Again, there are some conflicts here on who was necessarily who in the Bible and what stories go with who. But Mary Magdalene did come into Jesus's retinue and followed him for as long as he was alive. She was there at the crucifixion and she was there at the resurrection. She was one of the three Marys. Mary Magdalene, being a prostitute, she serviced all manner of individuals. Back then, there was not necessarily a binary. There was men, women, and those in between. And they have different regional names as well. That's a whole other topic to get into. But she was, by that merit, patron saint of bisexuals. You could even say patron saint of pansexuals. And then moving on to the T in LGBT, we have trans. So for this one, I've chosen Joan of Arc for obvious reasons. She was a woman who dressed as a man. She was born in 1412 in Domremy, France, which is in, I believe, also in the south of France. I could be wrong there, but she was born in Domremy, France. Her story is, as a child, she was a peasant child. She heard the voices of saints, Saint Michael, Saint Catherine, and they told her to go to the Dauphin of France. A Dauphin would be like a duke, similar to a duke. To go to the Dauphin of France, because this Dauphin would be crowned king, and France was supposed to be taken back. Long story short, she eventually became a very powerful individual in the French army and in capturing France back. But she was inspired. Some say she was inspired. Some say she said the saints told her to do this. Others say she did this of her own free will. Without inspiration, just did it. To wear the armor of male soldiers who went into battle. After France was taken back for the king, she was killed, murdered as a heretic. She was burnt at the stake. She was deemed heretical. And it wasn't until centuries later that she was canonized. So Joan of Arc here is the patron saint of trans individuals, because of her bravery and courage, and because of her taking on the image of a male to get through all of the battles that she had to deal with, both physical and spiritual. Now, I do have a little bit of a list of just generally queer saints. So we have Mary Magdalene again. Like I said, she is the one I chose for patron saint of bisexuals, but she could even be seen as the patron of any queer individual, anyone not fitting specifically into the first four letters of the LGBTQ acronym. Just like Saint Sebastian is the patron saint of all gay people in general, but specifically gay men, Mary Magdalene can be seen as just a queer saint, if we don't want to just see her as the patron saint of bisexuals. And you see that with saints in general, their ability to cross over. So like with Saint Christopher, most people think of him as the patron saint of traveling. However, the Archangel Raphael is very much seen as a patron saint of travelers. And then we have Lazarus. For those of you who know the story of Lazarus being resurrected, when he came out of his tomb, we can see that as a metaphor for us coming out. That shroud being the lie that we had to hold to keep ourselves safe, that lie of heterosexuality. And by shedding that cloak and by coming out of the tomb, we can see that as him being the patron saint of coming out and being our full authentic selves. There's also a little bit, for those of you who do work with Guadalupe or Mary, like I do, there has been a little bit of a movement where she is seen as queer liberator. Some of this is attached to the fact of her symbolism with roses, and roses being love. Also, the femininity there. Femininity and queerness often intersect in a lot of spiritual traditions, older spiritual traditions, as well as the ones that are newly burgeoning. But Guadalupe, with her crown and her rays and her beauty and the roses, just like we associate Saint Sebastian because of his beauty with gayness and queerness, we associate Guadalupe with her beauty to general queerness and to the liberation of queer individuals. There are also some HIV/AIDS patrons. A lot of them are the old healers of plague. For instance, I don't necessarily, a lot of them were plague healers, but not even just plague, but those who were very well known to cause miraculous healing. So saints like Avertanus and Romeo, or Vivaldo and Bartolo, certain saints from the 13 Helpers, which was a medieval categorization of saints that were seen to help during infectious disease. So if you decide to work with any of them, here's a little way to do so. First, you want to develop a relationship. So that can be through offerings, that can be through prayers, that can be through learning their history and doing some research. If they have a shrine, you could visit that and leave offerings or make prayers or do novenas. Offerings are going to vary between what saints like what, but usually you can't go wrong with water and bread.
I was just going to ask you, after you named all of these saints, like, how would somebody work with them? Like, is there certain, because these are very, some of these are very hard to find saints when it comes to coins and statues and even pre-done novena candles. So I was going to say, how would somebody go to working with them? And could somebody who is not necessarily LGBTQ+ work, like if they had a friend, family member, you know, and they felt that they needed some extra guidance, protection, like, how would you go about working with these saints and asking for their guidance and support?
Yes. So even the ones who, so the ones I've listed, I specifically listed that were going to be more accessible. So you generally are going to be able to find a medal of like Saint Sebastian. For instance, I do have a medal of Saint Sebastian. Hildegard von Bingen, you can find pictures all over of her. She also has books that she has written. So even owning one of those books, which are still in print, owning one of those books, let's say, for instance, since I just finished talking about HIV/AIDS, since she was known as a healer, you could work with Hildegard von Bingen for the health of a queer individual, whether they have AIDS or whether they're undergoing surgery or any other reason. Mary Magdalene, you can often find prayer cards of her. I'm assuming, usually if they have a prayer card, they have a medal too. I have never seen a medal of her, but I have seen prayer cards of Mary Magdalene. And same with Joan of Arc. She has a medal, she has a prayer card. If you would like to create your own novena candle, simply buy a plain novena candle, print out a picture, and glue it to the candle. You could also print the picture out, write your prayer on the back of that paper, fold it up and stick it under the candle. Make sure it's not thick enough that it's going to wobble the candle when you do that. You know, practice fire safety. But most of these saints are going to be accessible. Now, the ones who are more obscure, for instance, saints, I believe Damien and Cosmos, they are doctoral saints. They are healing saints. They are twins. Actually, I take that back. There are a lot of couplings of males for whatever reason when it comes to healing. Some of them are friends, some of them are twins, some of them were seen as lovers. But Saints Cosmo and Damien, they're known. But even then, I don't think I've ever seen like prayer cards or medals to them. So they might be another situation where you just have to find a picture and print it out. The ones who are more obscure, if you can at least get the name, obviously if you're finding them, you're going to have a name, write that name out and tape that or glue that to the candle or write your petition on the backside of the paper that you wrote their name on. Or you could even write a letter to that saint, you know, dear saint, insert name, please watch over, protect, and heal, you know, and then the individual's full name, sign it, put amen, fold it up, put that under the candle. Usually you can determine what colors to associate with which, if you want to go this route, you can determine what colors to associate with which saints based on if they have a painting or a picture, what colors stand out. So for instance, most people know Saint Michael. If you look at nearly any of his paintings, reds come out, and in just slightly less number, blues come out. So red and blue are heavily associated with Saint Michael. Now, let's say this saint does agree to work with you and does cause a miracle or answers the prayer that you asked. The best way to give back, especially if they're a more obscure saint, is through charity or donations. You give your money, and you most times donors will have the option of writing who it's from, and you can just put saint and then their name, or make a donation in the name of them. So instead of writing your name, you put their name and then send that donation. You could also post on your personal social media about the success of the work. I see this a lot with, so it used to be tradition that if Saint Jude were to grant your prayer, that you take an ad out in the paper and you thank him that way. It has become more of posting on social media, thank you Jude for coming through so quickly with my request for et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We also see this with Saint Expedite. I see this very often with Saint Expedite, is to post on Instagram or Facebook a picture of Saint Expedite and below it the caption reading the success you had in the working of whatever you asked of him. And the final way you can thank them is just by spreading their information or their story. If someone comes to you with a problem and it's very similar to the problem that you had with in life, and you asked a specific saint and they came through for you, or if you know that this individual could be helped by that saint, even if it wasn't something that you specifically asked that saint for before, and you let them know about it, that is a way to thank the saint. So spreading their information and spreading their story. But that is what I have for you.
That's a lot more of the saints than I've ever worked with. I mean, I the little bit I even did with Saint Joseph to sell a home, like, obviously he doesn't like working with me because there were six of them in the yard and nothing happened. Do you find that the saints work better maybe with somebody of a certain religious persuasion versus somebody who is maybe not so much of the saints belief, suddenly trying to jump in and go, well, this aligns with what I'm trying for, even though I've never really worked with them, kind of like a, if I can get it, I can get it.
I personally see this two ways, and this is probably because I practice another religion. So in Buddhism, we have the bodhisattvas. They help everyone and anyone regardless. That is part of their vows that they took, was to get everyone, every last being out of samsara. So they help everyone, no matter what. That's how I think of the saints. They have this boundless compassion, and they use that to help people. Now, the second way I think of it is the saints, if we want to look at this in the religious perspective of Christianity and what the goals of Christianity are, the goals of Christianity are to get everyone to convert to Christ. And if a way to do that is for a saint to answer a prayer, they will do that. So I see the saints as, like the bodhisattvas, boundless in compassion. But you could also look at it as, this is another opportunity for the Christian church to get a point. So the saints will answer that question if it means the possibility of that individual coming to Christianity. Now, whether they work better or not, I think that depends on the saint, and whether they feel like they're a good fit for you. The saints are seen as still living and still able to create miracles. That's part of becoming a saint, is showing that even after death, you can still perform miracles. And to be honest, just like the bodhisattvas are able to help in any, so you have like Medicine Buddha for healing, but he can also be protector. You have Tara, who is protector, but she can also heal. I think that the same of the saints, like I said earlier. So Saint Christopher is primarily known for traveling, and Raphael, the archangel, is known for healing. But Raphael is also a patron saint of traveling. And if you work with Christopher enough, I'm pretty sure he could intercede for you in a healing. But some saints do have their inclinations. And if you work with one saint most of the time, they could help you in nearly every area that you ask. I don't work with any one saint particularly, but I do work with Guadalupe, even though I see her in a context slightly adjacent to Catholicism. She's kind of the only one that I ever go to, and she's come through every time that I've needed her.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really tried working with any of the saints. I've just never really felt called to do so. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing, really. I should probably pay more attention. I say this, I'm like looking over at the wall of Saint Sanctuary over here. But I've just never, you know, fell to it. I mean, I think the only one that I've ever really, not personally worked with, but one that I recommend to people, is it Peregrine, I believe, and I'm drawing a blank all of a sudden, patron saint for cancer.
Yep, you know, cancer, tumors, and contagion, yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the healing work I do are for people with cancer. So, you know, I'm like, hey, if you know, but it's not necessarily me asking her to intercede. You know, I'm telling the client, like, if you so wish, you know, try to work with her. But
I want to make a comment there, since you said her. It is a male. I don't think that saints, after they pass on, have a gender.
Okay. And see, I've always heard her in for Peregrine, and that tells me how much I've done anything with it.
Saint Peregrine is male. He was a monk or a priest, I believe. But that's like something else that comes up if you practice full Catholicism, is understanding that these spirits kind of lose their gender. Okay. And so like with Guadalupe, there are traditions in her magical practice where we give her a weapon of some sort. And sometimes it's a gun. And she uses that gun to protect. And some people are like, oh, that's just the motherly protection. I was like, I've heard stories where that's not motherly at all. That is some aggressive, brute, masculine, energetic shit that happened. So they kind of lose like these ideas that we as humans have of gender. They lose that identity and they become trans in and of themselves in a way.
You know, it kind of goes with the whole magic. You always hear people, is it good? Is it bad? Is it light? It just is.
Yes.
So, I mean, it could kind of see where they, you know, pass on to that other side. They are just like this form of consciousness you know, that can intercede on your behalf if you're willing to ask. And then here comes that other, that way other side of like three fences down the road of where everything is all connected as one. And is it some sort of higher entity, God, whatever you want to call it, just coming down in what other form that you will pay attention to and that you're comfortable dealing with?
Yeah.
You know, so again, maybe that's why I've never felt to deal with the saints, because it's Catholic and I snuck out the Catholic door with nobody was looking.
And that is another thing I want to make kind of clear here is if you've stumbled on this podcast and you by chance are just Christian and you don't practice witchcraft, these saints, if you are a queer Catholic or a queer Christian, these saints are for you too. You don't even have to look at them in a magical context. You can go to the shrine of Saint Sebastian, if one exists. I honestly don't know if there is one or not. And light a novena and say his prayer. There are saints for every situation, and they each have their prayers for each kind of situation. You just have to do a little digging. But if you are a queer individual who's struggling to come out or is unsure of how your family will react, and you go to these shrines or even find a candle of them or light a candle in their name, it doesn't even have to be obvious. It could be, you know, this nice little candle that you got from Target that you are going to say, okay, I'm going to light this and pray to Saint Sebastian.
And a white candle can be used for just about anybody and anything. So it's very unassuming.
Yeah. You know, you can light that candle and ask for his guidance, ask for his protection. The more people that come to him in that context, in the context of seeing him as a gay saint, the more likely he's going to answer prayers. It's one thing if one person went to a saint and in their imagery there was like, you know, something that, you know, there was a corn stalk or something. So like, okay, patron saint of farming, even though they're horribly bloodied laying on the side of the street. If one person goes and sees them as that, probably not going to work, but they are miraculous in what they can do. So it could work as well. But the more attention that saint gets for a specific thing, the more energy that saint is going to put into answering those kinds of prayers. And Saint Sebastian has been known for queerness, I believe, probably since like the 70s or 80s it was. So he's been at this for a while. So he's no stranger to the queer individual.
He's got some practice.
Yes.
He'll know just what you're talking about, what you need to understand it.
Yes.
It's been pretty interesting. But then again, like I said, I don't work very ever the same. So I was like learning new things, and you always come around with all this new knowledge. And I'm like, what? That goes deeper than I thought. Stop acting almighty and knowing there, Zach. Show up.
I'm a scholar and everyone else is just a peasant.
So if somebody wanted to find out more about these saints, you know, do you have good references to like websites, books, anything that they can, or is it literally just kind of digging around and see what you can find?
You have to dig. There are, I don't have any that are specific.
Okay.
They're going to be either Catholic news outlets about the saint themselves, their life. So you could go to like EWTN, I believe it's .com.org. You could go to the Vatican's official site. You can go to pretty much any shrine or bookstore where they have books about the saints. And if you want to be really simple, you can get like the children's version, but there are some very detailed versions that I've seen that are written by, you know, scholars who dedicate their lives to specifically the hagiography of saints. And so you can get really good books on that. Now, if you want to get into the magical aspects, any folk tradition, whether it's hoodoo or brujeria, they make use of the saints pretty heavily. So finding, be careful, of course, but finding on the internet a website ran by a practitioner who knows what they're doing and is highly respected they'll often have like a couple posts about, here's how to work with Saint Expedite, or here's how to work with, you know, with the saint. So you can get an idea of how to go about approaching a saint. But there's not a whole lot of literature on the internet or off the internet about queer saints. It is becoming a little more common, so it's becoming a little easier to find. But again, sometimes you have to infer the information, which most of these saints, that was the situation. You know, when Joan of Arc was wearing her armor, she wasn't thinking, I'm doing this for the liberation of trans individuals. Mm-hmm. It's because now, looking back at the scope we have, we can attribute her as going against the gender binary. Same with Hildegard von Bingen, same with Saint Sebastian. You know, they weren't actively working toward the liberation of queer individuals. Now, for those who did, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, individuals like that, individuals who have worked actively for the liberation of queer individuals, you could see them as folk saints. They were public heroes. Public heroes can become folk saints. And that's how a lot of folk saints become folk saints. So if you can find like those novena candles of celebrities, and I believe Marsha has one, Marsha P. Johnson, there probably is one on Etsy for Sylvia Rivera, or you could commission one. You know, if you even want to go a little further, you could do Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, you know, for different aspects of social justice. You could work with them in that context, you know, mm-hmm. the folk state context.
You know, it's funny. We've been making some of the novena candles here for some of the gods and goddesses that aren't, you never see candles for.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's throw a few out there, see if people like them. They seem to. So now I'm going to be like, all right, Zach, what do we need to do for these other ones? Because, you know, we have a pretty big and open community here around Lakewood. And
yes, you know, I forgot to mention this, and I was going to do this in the beginning. If you can't tell by my voice, I woke up like an hour ago. I want to thank Melissa for being such a lovely individual and holding space for all of us who are queer, for all of us who are Black or Indigenous peoples of color, for those of us who are trans. She has opportunities for all of us to grow and flourish in her shop. You know, she has absolutely no problem with any of us. And so I just want to thank Melissa and recognize Melissa for being an amazing ally to us.
Aw, well, thank you. No, I mean, I'm like, just don't be a dick and I don't have a problem with you, you know? But thank you. That's so sweet. Don't tell anybody, you know, I have a badass, you know, image to maintain, and that just completely undermined it publicly. Thank you. But yeah, I'll have to reach out to you and be like, oh, what could we do for these candles for people and let them know? And, you know, there's a lot of young people now, I think, starting to feel more comfortable coming out, you know, and letting it be known, but, you know, still want that, you know, guidance and to know, and maybe like a spiritual side too with it. So
there has heavily been this like crossing of queerness and this intersection of queerness and magic. And I think that's because magic inherently is queer. You know, like you were saying earlier, it just is. It doesn't have a definition. It is neither good, it is neither bad. So if you look at it in that way, it's queer. It doesn't have an identity. It just exists in its own way and how it wishes to exist.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point. I mean, this is one of the times where you're doing all the talking, because I know absolutely nothing on this topic, but I'm not gonna, you know, pull it out of my ass and like mislead people. So this is really all you on this one. but what we also decided, I think I decided for us that we would have to keep these a little bit shorter, because
yes,
the podcast server's like, what are you doing? That's too big. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is like the second installment for the like Christian witchcraft thing. If we do a third one, it is going to be over the rosary. And I will talk a little bit more specifically about, there will be a small topic in that discourse about Mary as, and her like queer aspects, because a lot of people are, for whatever reason this year, turning to the rosary. Like I see more of it coming up, and you know, the books like The Way of the Rose is becoming popular, and people, you know, reconfiguring the rosary in their own way to fit their own practice. And a lot of those individuals obviously are magical practitioners, but they're also queer. So Mary is very much a friend. Mary and all of her aspects, in my opinion, is very much a friend to the queer community.
Yeah. Just in the energy of working with her, she's very accepting and loving of anybody and everybody. You know, if you're willing to reach out, and if you're willing to even entertain the thoughts of reaching out to her, you know, she does not kind of give a side eye and go, everybody but you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not her thing. I would look forward to the rosary one. So we'll have to put that one together, because I mean, I can vouch for kind of taking that rosary and doing my own thing with it.
I just finished making my own.
All right, we'll show off. I know I've talked about doing it, but I haven't done it yet.
The physical rosary. I still have yet to like rewrite the prayers, but yeah, I got my olive wood beads in, so you'll be getting malas soon.
Good, because more people are looking, and maybe what part of that discussion will be malas versus the rosary and the similar. Yeah. So.
But yeah, I used some of them to make my own rosary, and then instead of a cross, I put my Guadalupe medal on. So.
It'll be interesting to see. You'll have to share it, possibly, if that's something you want to share, you know. All right. Well, thank you for your knowledge on this topic. Like I said, this was all you doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
So we will have you back for our next pagan Christian witchcraft, however you want to frame it. I've heard so many things here lately.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll be into the rosaries. We'll have to maybe, you know, I think at some point maybe go a little deeper into Cipriani, and you know, I don't think he gets near enough attention. I do know him because of some of the hoodoo workings and stuff, but I still don't work with him. I know he existed and I know what he was over, but that's about it.
Yeah. He's a little dark. So yeah, I would definitely, like, if you're going to work with him, be very advanced in like your basic workings. He can get dark. He's not like Santa Muerte, but he'll scare the shit out of you.
Yeah, I would be like, okay, let's see, because I'm just that way. All right, well, thanks for joining us, Zach. And if anybody wants to reach out to you, because you can do some of your work and readings for people via like over the internet, phone, Zoom. So how would they reach out to you?
The best way to contact me, if you are someone that doesn't already follow me, is to go to Facebook and search for Red Cloth White Candle Brujeria and message me through there. You can also contact me through my personal Instagram, which is TIOCUAHUITL. Type that in Instagram, I'll pop up. You can message me through there, but that is a little bit about, I post on there about my personal spiritual beliefs. So you can get an idea of who I am through looking at that.
And we do have you potentially in the store here in the Cleveland area. So around your work schedule. So we don't get to have you very often, but when we do have you in.
So, I will be in. Yeah, I'll be in later in July of this year.
Yeah, July of 2021. So if you're listening to this afterwards, 2021, but you can always check our website, goddessyli.com, and go to the reader healer page and click on there and you'll find when he's going to be here. And again, thanks for joining us, Zach, and making it so easy for me to have another episode ready to go. Cause all I got to do now is edit and add music and get ready.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much. And, we'll see you on the next episode about rosaries and malas.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.